You may be seated.
A couple of Sunday nights ago, we began a series on worship, and because of last Sunday being a singing over at West Huntsville, we did not assemble here, and consequently, last Sunday, I had a question and answers session scheduled for our evening worship, and we decided to postpone that. I decided to postpone that until this evening, and so due to the number of questions that I have received, I think it's actually going to take us two evening assemblies to look at these. I have at least seven questions that we're going to be dealing with, and I think for us to give them the proper treatment, we probably need to divide this up. And so our series on worship is actually going to be bumped down for a good little while, because then there's our third Sunday singing night, and then I'll be gone a couple of Sunday nights because of Bible camp and Horizons leadership camp up at Henderson, Tennessee. So we'll get back to our series on worship in July sometime, Lord willing. So we are just keep that in mind, and we'll do some review on that very first lesson, and then we'll begin a series of several lessons looking at this very important subject of worship. But tonight, we want to address some questions that I have received. And again, I appreciate when you turn questions in. I appreciate receiving several questions, and these came in written format, text format, email format. You can send those to me in any way. I just always ask that you send me a written question in some form, because if you just tell it to me verbally, I'll get it mixed up, and I won't answer the question you asked, and you won't even recognize the question you asked if you depend on my memory. So just write that down and give that to me in some way, or send it to me electronically. That's just fine. But one question that I've always had, and maybe some of you here know the answer to that, is why do they make men's suit coats with these pocket flaps, and there's no pockets here? You can't put anything up here. And inside, I have this little pocket that I could put about two packs of saltine crackers in. Why did they do that? I don't know. That has nothing to do with the Bible, but it's a good question. Maybe some of you can answer it for me. But I did receive seven questions, and we're going to look at, hopefully, Lord willing, about four of those tonight, and then we'll put the other three, Lord willing, into next Sunday evening. So let's start with these. Question number one: how did Saul, King Saul of the Old Testament, how did Saul die? And the references that are given, 1 Samuel 31 and 2 Samuel chapter 1. No doubt we're familiar with these in the end, the very last chapter of 1 Samuel, the very first chapter of 2 Samuel. And when you read these two accounts in 1 Samuel chapter 31, the question is, how did King Saul die? When you read in chapter 31, you will see that in verse 1, it says, the Philistines fought against Israel. Saul's involved in a war against the Philistines. And the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. Then the Philistines followed hard after Saul and his sons, and the Philistines killed Jonathan, Aminadab, and Malashua, Saul's sons. The battle became fierce against Saul. The archers hit him, and he was severely wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, and for he was greatly afraid. Therefore, Saul took a sword and fell on it, thus committing suicide, according to the text here. When his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on his own sword and died with him. So Saul, his three sons, his armor bearer, and all his men died together that same day. Then, if you look at the account in 2 Samuel chapter 1, you get a little bit of a different perspective, or a little bit of a different telling of the story. In 2 Samuel chapter 1, we begin reading at verse 6. It says, then a young man who told him said, this is really to set the context in verses 1 through 6, an Amalekite comes to David. David, obviously having a very vested interest in everything that is happening here. In verse 1, after the death of Saul, David returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites. David had stayed 2 days in Ziklag. And the third day, behold, it happened And this is verse 2. A man from Saul's came from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and dust on his head. So it was that when he came to David, he fell on the ground and prostrated himself. David said to him, "Where have you come from?" And he said, "I have escaped from the camp of Israel." David said to him, "How did the matter go? Please tell me." And he, the Amalekite, answered, "The people have fled from the battle. Many of the people have fallen and are dead. And Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead also." So David said to the young man who told him, "How do you know that Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead?" Then the young man who told him said, "As it happened by chance, as I happened by chance to be on Mount Gilboa, there was Saul leaning on his spear, and indeed the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. Now, when he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me, and I answered, 'Here I am.' And he said to me, 'Who are you?' And I answered, 'I am an Amalekite.' And he said to me again, 'Please stand over me and kill me, for anguish has come upon me, but my life still remains in me.' So I stood over him and killed him, because I was sure that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown that was on his head and the bracelet that was on his arm, and it brought them here to my Lord," speaking to David. The two accounts, according to the thinking of many, do not seem to be exactly in harmony with one another. Which one is the accurate account? The question is, how did Saul die? Did he die, as 1 Samuel 31 tells us, by his own hands, suicide? Or did he die, as 2 Samuel chapter 1 describes, the Amalekite says that he killed him, that he finished him off, even though obviously he was mortally wounded, his death was imminent, regardless of the circumstances. But how did it happen? Did Saul take his own life, or did the Amalekite take his life? I want to encourage you also to turn for a moment to 1 Chronicles chapter 10. And in 1 Chronicles chapter 10, the entirety of that chapter, it's only 14 verses, describes the end of Saul's life and the end of his sons' lives. And there's a repeat here of the events that we have just been reading from 1 Samuel. And the account in 1 Chronicles follows far more closely to what 1 Samuel 31 says in regard to how Saul died. And when you look at that text, and we'll not read it in its entirety, the text tells us, though, in verse 3, "The battle became fierce against Saul." This is 1 Chronicles 10, verse 3. "The battle became fierce against Saul. The archers hit him, and he was wounded by the archers. Saul said to his armor bearer, 'Draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and abuse me.' But the armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore, Saul took a sword and fell on it." And when the armor bearer, now notice, saw that Saul was dead. The armor bearer saw that Saul was dead. He also fell on his own sword and died. So Saul and his three sons died, and all his house died together. Notice in Chronicles particularly how it is emphasized. The armor bearer saw what? That Saul was dead. Then notice that verse 6 tells us that Saul and his sons died, and his house died together. The emphasis there in 1 Chronicles 10, uncategorically, is that Saul died by his own hand. He had been mortally wounded, but that he died by his own hand. So what are we to make of the Amalekite and his story in 2 Samuel chapter 1? It is very probable that the Amalekite is not being entirely truthful, and that he is embellishing the account of Saul's death, perhaps for personal gain and personal reward. because he goes immediately to David, perhaps seeking a favor because everybody knew that Saul was trying to kill David. And perhaps the Amalekite thought, if I can be the one who tells Saul that I have taken out your enemy, then I'll be greatly rewarded. Because I want you to think about this. The account you read about of Saul's death in 1 Samuel 31, and the account you read about Saul's death in 1 Chronicles 10 are inspired accounts. I know 2 Samuel 1 is as well. But those are inspired accounts, listen, of which there are no human witnesses. How could anyone know to write what was written in 1 Samuel 31 and 1 Chronicles 10 because no one survived? No one lived. That's an inspired account of which there are no human witnesses. Only the Spirit of God could have revealed it to the author of 2 Samuel and the author of 1 Chronicles, those details. That is the only person, the only being, that could have revealed those details, because there were no human witnesses. It would appear that if that is indeed the case, which it does seem to be the case, the Amalekite perhaps could have seen something happen from a great distance. But it would appear that he walked upon the scene and he kind of put it together. Because after all, if Saul fell on his own sword and the armor bearer fell on his own sword, it would be fairly obvious that these men had done that to themselves, or at least that they were dead. Saul also had been wounded by the archers, it said, so there would have been a great deal of blood, a great deal of wounds that he would have sustained because of that. And it is very probable that the story is included in 2 Samuel chapter 1. It's inspired too, isn't it? But inspiration often includes, in the pages of the Bible, inspired stories, accurate stories of people who have not told the truth, doesn't it? And perhaps the reason the story is included here is to tell us, tell the people then and now, how David happened to acquire Saul's crown and amulet. Because the conclusion could have been that David now has Saul's crown, so what would have been the natural conclusion? David must have killed Saul. But we know David didn't kill Saul. David was innocent of that. And the Amalekite, perhaps thinking he would get personal gain, brought these precious things, these royal signatures, emblems, to David, acknowledging him as the next king. He calls him my lord. And this story is here, by inspiration as well, to show us how David came to be in possession of those emblems. That he did not take them himself, he did not take Saul's life. The inspired story, the inspired account of which there are no human witnesses, is that Saul took his own life. And this man simply, I think, was trying to capitalize in some kind of way on that very unfortunate thing. I want you to notice something else from 1 Chronicles chapter 10 that tells us something even more conclusively in answer to the question, how did Saul die? 1 Chronicles 10 tells us who took Saul's life. If you keep reading in the text, in verse 13, 1 Chronicles 10, verse 13, so Saul died for his unfaithfulness which he had committed against the Lord, because he did not keep the word of the Lord, and also because he consulted a medium for guidance. But he did not inquire of the Lord, therefore, what does it say? He killed him. How did Saul die? God put him to death. God was intrinsic in Saul's demise and death. It was the ultimate punishment from God that God took his life. And hopefully that sheds some light into this question, because it does come up from time to time. You'll see skeptics, or those who are trying to find contradictions in the Bible, that will point to passages like this to say, well, the Bible doesn't coalesce with itself right here, and there is a contradiction. But I think with just some simple steps and analysis of it like this, we can see that that is really not the case. Question number two, and really question number two and question number three are related to one another very closely. And so I'm going to read them together here, and we're going to handle them one by one, but also kind of at the same time. Question number two is this: who made the two tablets of stone? And obviously from Exodus. And question number three is, what was written on the two tablets of stone? And with each one of these questions, the person who has turned it in has put a series of verses from the different texts in Exodus, and also the parallel accounts of it in the book of Deuteronomy. So who made the two tablets of stone? For that, we're going to look at a couple of passages, because once again, someone who is not very knowledgeable perhaps in the Word of God and is simply picking and choosing places that he wants to go, and I don't think that's what the person who asked the question is doing, but you can see that there's more than one mention made of the tablets of stone and somebody who made them. And there's a reason for that. In Exodus chapter 24, as we look at Exodus chapter 24, if you would, look at verse 12. Exodus chapter 24, verse 12 tells us, "The Lord said to Moses, come up to me on the mountain and be there. And I, God, I will give you tablets of stone and the law and commandments which I have written, that you may teach them." So this says that God was going to give Moses the tablets of stone, obviously implying heavily that God had made the tablets of stone. And yet, if you look over in chapter 34 of the book of Exodus, just a few pages over in your Bible, and you look at verse 1 of chapter 34, you read this: "The Lord said to Moses, cut two tablets of stone." Now God is speaking to Moses, "Cut two tablets of stone like the first time, and I will write on these tablets the words that were on the first tablets." Now here's the key phrase here to helping us understand something: "which you broke." You keep reading, "so be ready in the morning and come up to the mountain, to Mount Sinai, and present yourself to me there at the top of the mountain." And then verse 4 tells us of Exodus 34, "So he," Moses, "cut two tablets of stone, and he hewed them out like the first ones. Then Moses rose early in the morning and went up Mount Sinai as God had commanded him, and he took in his hand the two tablets of stone." So who made the two tablets of stone, God or Moses? Well, the answer is both. Because it's obvious that from chapter 24, as we get into the second question a little bit more, you'll see the timeline of how all of this is put together, harmonizing Exodus and Deuteronomy. But apparently, God initially gave Moses two tablets of stone that contained on it the law that he had written. And there are a few other texts, we'll read those in a minute, that tell us that these were written with the very finger of God. Such dramatic and compelling language that is used there in the description. But something happened in between Exodus 24 and Exodus 34 where it says Moses made the two tablets. The people had constructed the golden calf, and they had begun to worship it. And God sent Moses back down to the people, and Moses, it tells us in chapter 32, came down from the mountain, and he saw all the happenings there and all the sinful things that were going on, and Moses became very angry because of that. And as you read in our text in chapter 32, Exodus 32, verse 19, it says, "So it was, as soon as he came near the camp," idolatry, immorality, all happening there. Moses now has returned at the sending of God. "As soon as he came near the camp, that he saw the calf, and he saw the dancing, the immorality. So Moses' anger became hot, and he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain." Of course, you know the old joke is Moses broke all 10 commandments at one time. But we see that Moses took the tablets of stone that God had given him back in chapter 24, and out of his anger and his rash reaction to the sin of the people, he threw them down and he broke them. God will make peace with the people, and God will forgive the people, and God will then call Moses back up the mountain to receive the law once again. But God tells him, as we already read in chapter 34, you make the tablets this time. You make the tablets this time, and you bring those, and I'll write on them again what I've already written on them the first time. There's a parallel to this in Deuteronomy chapter 9. If you look at Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 17, you'll see the parallel that tells us this. Moses is recounting the history of the people up to that point. And Moses says in Deuteronomy 9, verse 17, "Then I took the two tablets and threw them out of my two hands and broke them before your eyes." So he even admits himself, as the people are preparing to go into the promised land, "Yeah, I did that. I broke them." But Exodus 34 then reminds us that God tells him, "Moses, you make some new ones, and you bring them up." So the answer to who made them obviously would be both. But this kind of parallels with the next question. Because question number three is, what was written on the two tablets? And as we begin to look at that, we have to kind of back up and maybe get a timeline and get our bearings straight to see the answer to that. But I think it's also helpful just to have the timeline. When you go back to Exodus chapter 19... Exodus chapter 19, the children of Israel, they've been on that journey from the Egyptian bondage. They have now settled at the foot of Mount Sinai. And God tells them to prepare for His coming down on the mountain to communicate with them. And chapter 19 is all about the things that they're to do to prepare for the coming of God. And then in chapter 20, we read that God will speak to the people, and that the people heard God from the mountain. In chapter 20, verse 1, it says, "God spoke all these words, saying..." And we begin reading what you and I recognize very readily as the Ten Commandments. There is a parallel to this. You may just want to hold your finger at the book of Deuteronomy, because we're going to flip back and forth between Exodus and Deuteronomy a few times here. But there's a parallel to this in Deuteronomy 4, in verse 33 and verse 36. Deuteronomy 4, verse 33, Moses says to the people, Deuteronomy 4, 33, "Did any people ever hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of the fire as you heard and live?" He's referring back to Exodus 20. 19 and 20, really. But he's referring back to that event. And he repeats it in verse 36. Deuteronomy 4, verse 36. "Out of heaven He let you hear God." He's talking to the children of Israel, and he says, "Out of heaven God let you hear His voice, that He might instruct you on earth. He showed you His great fire, and you heard His words out of the midst of the fire." That's Exodus 20. Moses is describing in Deuteronomy 4, he's referring back to what we read in Exodus 19, the preparation for it, and Exodus 20. Well, you keep reading in Exodus chapter 20, and guess what you come to in verse 18? Go back to Exodus 20 now, and God has given the Ten Commandments. They've heard the voice of God out of the thunderings and the fire from the mountain. The people have heard the voice of God. That's what Moses says in Deuteronomy 4. They have heard the voice of God. They heard the voice of God give the Ten Commandments. And then in verse 18, "Now all the people witnessed the thunderings and the lightnings." This is Exodus 20, verse 18. The only thing God has said up to this point is what you and I define and know as the Ten Commandments. "When the people heard all the lightnings, the thunderings, and saw the lightning flashes, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off. Then they said to Moses, "You speak with us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die." The people basically are saying in this text, as you keep reading, we don't want to hear the voice of God anymore because it's too terrifying. You keep reading in verse 20. Moses said to the people, "Do not fear, for God has come to test you, that His fear may be before you, and that you may not sin." So the people stood afar off, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the children of Israel, you have seen that I have talked with you from heaven." And so the people say, we don't want to hear the voice of God anymore. It's too terrifying. And they commission Moses, "You talk to God and you relay that back to us." And God says in this text in Exodus 20, "That's how we'll handle it. That's how we'll do it." And again, remember the question is about what's written on the tablets of stone. And we're developing this. And then in chapter 21, God begins the dialogue with Moses. In chapter 21, you begin reading, "Now these are the judgments which you shall set before them." This is God speaking to Moses. And he says, "Here are the things you need to tell them," the children of Israel. From chapter 21, verse 1 forward, the people are not hearing the voice of God anymore, like they did in chapter 20, verses 1 through 17. And they're relying upon Moses to relay all that information to them. And so you have then, in our timeline, two writings, you might say. In our text, once again, as we look at it, in chapter 24, you remember God said, "I will give you the two tablets." Look at chapter 31. Look at Exodus chapter 31, verse 18. Exodus 31, in verse 18, the last verse of that chapter. "And when he had made an end of speaking with him on Mount Sinai, he gave Moses two tablets of testimony, tables of stone, written with the finger of God." But again, we continue with our question here that God said he will give him the tablets. Chapter 31, in chapter 24, he said he will give him the tablets. In chapter 31, here's the actual giving of the tablets. But we also look back at Exodus 24 at some things it says that Moses wrote. See, God wrote some things. Moses wrote some things. And in chapter 24, we read in verse 4, "Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, and he rose early in the morning and built an altar to the Lord on the mountain, and giving sacrifice." And if you skip down to verse 3, "Then he took the book of the covenant and read in the hearing of the people, and they said, 'All that the Lord has done, we will do and be obedient.'" So, you've got two categories of writings. You have what the text tells us is the writing with the very finger of God on the tablets, but you also have a description here of some things that Moses wrote that, rather than being called the tablets, is called the book, scroll of the covenant. And it would appear that what Moses wrote would be all those things that are included from chapter 21, verse 1, forward. But it is the Ten Commandments that were the actual writing of God itself. For further affirmation of that, look, if you will, at a couple of other passages. Look at Exodus 32. I know we're kind of skipping around, and I hope you're writing these references down so that you can look at them again to get them in kind of the chronology that they belong. But if you would, look at Exodus chapter 32. Look at verses 15 and 16. In Exodus 32, verse 15, Moses turned and went down from the mountain. Now this is after he's learned the people are involved in sin. Moses turned and went down, but it's before he's broken the tablets. Moses turned and went down from the mountain, and the two tablets of the testimony were in his hand. The tablets were written on both sides, on one side and on the other they were written. Now, the tablets were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God engraved on the tablets. Still, what's there? Turn, if you will, to Deuteronomy chapter 9 and 10. And look at Deuteronomy chapter 9 and 10 as Moses is giving a summary of all this time and all of these events. In Deuteronomy 9, we read in verse 10 and verse 15 the following. Deuteronomy 9, verse 10 tells us, "Then the Lord delivered to me the two tablets of stone written with the finger of God, and on them were all the words of the Lord, or all the words which the Lord had spoken to you on the mountain from the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly." What's that a reference to? Exodus 19 and 20, when the people heard the voice of God from the mountain. What did they hear? Exodus 20, verses 1 through 17, the Ten Commandments. That's reaffirmed even in this same chapter, Deuteronomy 9, verse 15. Deuteronomy 9, verse 15, where it says, "So I turned and came down from the mountain, and the mountain burned with fire, and the two tablets of the covenant were in my two hands." You see, he's talking about the scene that is depicted in Exodus 19, where God came down on the mountain and there was the fire and the smoke and the quaking and all the things that caused the people to fear. But the text also tells us, when we put all of this together, that the people heard the voice of God. But after they heard the voice of God with the Ten Commandments, in Exodus 20, beginning at verse 18, they said, "We don't want to hear it anymore." And Moses says, "What I have on these tablets written by God is what you heard before you said, 'We don't want to hear anymore.'" And look, if you will, one more time in Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 1 and following. Deuteronomy 10, Moses writes, "At that time the Lord said to me, 'Hew for yourself two tablets of stone like the first.'" Remember, because he had broken them. "And come up to me on the mountain and make yourself an ark of wood, and I will write on the tablets." God wrote on these. "I will write on the tablets the words that were on the first tablets, which you broke, and you shall put them in the ark." So I made an ark of acacia wood, hewed two tablets of stone like the first, and went up the mountain having the two tablets in my hand. And he wrote, God, he wrote on the tablets according to the first writing, the Ten Commandments. In some Hebrew, the understanding here is the ten words. We understand that it's not just ten words by themselves, one through ten, but that's symbolic, representative of the way we use the same phrase, like, what's the word on the street? You know, we're looking for more than one word, right? We're looking perhaps many words. God wrote the ten words, many words, more than just ten, the Ten Commandments, which the Lord had spoken. Now here it defines it very clearly. "Which the Lord had spoken to you in the mountain from the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly when the Lord gave them to me." That's Exodus 19 and 20 once again. We have kind of been a little repetitive with this because the Scriptures are a little repetitive even in emphasizing this. But I think it is time well spent as we think about these questions. Who made the two tablets and what was on the two tablets. And it's pretty fascinating as you begin digging into this that I never really had realized. Not only are there the two tablets of stone, which we understand being the Ten Commandments, the ten words being written upon them, but also that from Exodus 21, verse 1 forward, that Moses wrote down all of those things. And it's called the Book of the Covenant. These are the tablets of the testimony, and that's called the Book of the Covenant. And that Moses eventually would read all of these to the people, and the people would agree, all that the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient. And so it's pretty fascinating when you begin digging in and looking at this. Let me share one more thing with you, and we will not get to our fourth question tonight, by the way. We will bump that into the next Sunday evening. But let me share with you one thing that comes from a commentary by Wilbur Fields on the commandments, on the tablets themselves, and then we will close. The question is asked sometimes, how were the Ten Commandments arranged and divided on the original stone tablets? It says they're written on front and back, which I understand is a little unusual that stone tablets be written on the front and the back. But the question sometimes is asked, how were they arranged? You know, was it 1 through 5 on one and 6 through 10 on the other? How were they arranged? Mr. Fields writes, he's actually Brother Fields, the undeniable truth is that we do not know. Some have proposed that 5 were on one slab and 5 on the other. That arrangement would place 137 words on the first tablet and 26 on the second. Others have suggested that the first 3 laws were on the first tablet and the last 7 were on the second tablet. This arrangement would come nearer to equalizing the writing on each slab, as could be done, and still allow the first tablet to end at the bottom with a completed commandment. Others have proposed that the first tablet had the first 4 commandments, which concerned men's duties to God, and the second tablet had the last 6, which involved men's duties to men. To this, we can only say, maybe so. This arrangement would place 122 words on the first tablet and 41 on the second. We see no reason for assuming that the first tablet had to end its writing at a division between commandments. Many ancient tablets ended in mid-sentence, and then the writing continued on the next tablet. So, as Brother Fields writes, how were they arranged on the two tablets? The undeniable truth is, we do not know. But what do we know? They were on the tablets. And again, written with the finger of God. A fascinating thought. And you and I have in our hands paper, electronically, not only those words, but so many more words written by God through inspired men with the Spirit of God that tell us about the Son of God, our Savior. And so if the reverence that was given to the things written on tables of stone by the very finger of God was so supreme, should it not be for those of us who live under a greater lawgiver, Christ, than Moses, have the supreme regard for the things written in the Word of God, the mind of God, the heart of God, the finger of God, the Spirit of God, to teach us how to live not only now, but for all eternity as His children? That's the invitation. The invitation to hear those words, to believe those words, to obey those words, and faithfully follow those words for all the rest of my days. And then live with God for all eternity. That invitation is extended tonight to anyone who needs to respond, to become a child of God, to be restored, to ask for prayers. There is no question about if God loves you. The answer is yes. The question is, will you obey Him? Would you come tonight as we stand and we sing?